Welcome to Revolutionize Your Retirement Radio, bringing you insights and strategies to help you create a magnificent and fulfilling second half of life. Here's your host, certified professional retirement coach and best-selling author, Dr. Dorian Mincer.
I want to welcome everyone to my fourth Tuesday Revolutionize Your Retirement Interview with Expert series. I'm Dorian Mincer, owner of Revolutionize Retirement and your host for this series. So today I am totally delighted to have Carrie Hannon as our guest. Carrie's actually been part of this series and I've interviewed her, I think maybe four times now. She's so prolific in her writing that I try to honor her and she has so much to share. So I am really delighted that Carrie's here again. We were just reminiscing at the beginning. We've known each other for a lot of years now, and it's fun to stay connected. During the pandemic, it hasn't been in person, although in the past, and hopefully again in the future, it will be in person. Carrie Hannon is a workplace futurist and a leading strategist on career management, entrepreneurship, personal finance, and retirement. She's a frequent TV, podcast, and radio commentator and is a sought-after keynote speaker at conferences. She's the best-selling and award-winning author of 14 books, including her newest book, which is called In Control at 50 Plus, How to Succeed in the New World of Work, and also Never Too Old to Get Rich, The Entrepreneur's Guide to Starting a Business Midlife. The number one bestseller on Amazon and selected by the Washington Post for its Book of the Month Club. She also had written a book, and I interviewed her kind of at the earlier part of the pandemic, and she had a book on remote work, and it was like working in your pajamas, which has wonderful resources from a remote work, which I think is continuing in many ways, although maybe hybrid, but we'll hear more about that from Carrie today. She's a senior columnist and an on-air expert at Yahoo Finance. She was previously an expert columnist, opinion writer, and regular contributor to the New York Times, MarketWatch, and Forbes, and was the PBS website nextavenue.org personal finance and entrepreneur expert. She's also worked as a writer, columnist, and editor for USA Today, U.S. News and World Report, Money Magazine, and as a contributor to the Wall Street Journal. Carrie lives in Washington, D.C. and Boston, Virginia, with her husband, who's a documentary producer and editor, Cliff Hackle, and her Labrador retriever, Elmore, known as Ellie. Carrie, I am so delighted to have you here with us again, and welcome.
Thank you, Dory. It is an absolute treat to be on your program and just to hear your voice. My gosh, we don't all get out to see each other as much as we want to, and we will, as you noted, in the future, but it's a real honor to be here and the important stuff we talk and work on and hopefully make an impact.
Great. As you talk about in this book, the workplace has really changed for workers over 50, particularly, I think, coming out of the pandemic, and not that we're totally out of it again, but hopefully more out of it than in it. So maybe we could start with why you wrote this book and what the trends are that you feel have profoundly changed the workplace, and then we can take it from there.
Yeah, absolutely. This is Dory. I took a look at in the book In Control at 50 Plus. I really took the time to dig down and find what really is emerging from what we all went through in the pandemic. And you're correct. We're not completely out of it, but we could definitely make note of some fundamental changes in the workplace that are here today. And so the five trends that I write about in this book that I researched and identified as really gaining strength as we move forward and are really quite beneficial to workers over 50 are five things. Let's start with the first one, which is remote work. And remote work is here to stay, right? Now, remote work had started pre-pandemic. There's no doubt about that. But younger workers in particular who are true digital native, they had begun asking their employers for this or the hiring managers and saying they realized they could work from anywhere. But for most of us, you had to beg your supervisor or your manager to let you work from home. It was a big perk. And then all of a sudden, we were all doing that. And guess what? they found out, companies and employers found out that not only were people getting the jobs done, they were productive, the performance was great. Plus, it was a cost saver for them on many levels. And for the older worker, yes, I do think as we move forward, we're going to see more hybrid options. But there is a core set that remote work has been accepted, and it just is here to stay. So the genie's out of the bottle, so to speak. And why I think this is so good, Dori, for workers, experienced workers, is that a couple of things. First of all, when you're in the workplace, when you're actually in an office, it can go a long way to fighting ageism if you don't have to be in that office. So if you're not right side by someone who's a couple decades younger than you, it's subliminal. But there is this sort of message of age versus youth, perhaps. But when you're remote or you're virtual, that isn't so front and center. So you really are not judged as much by your cover as you are by your performance and productivity. And this is a real plus, I think, for older workers. Secondly, a lot of people retire earlier than they say they're going to, and it's often because of a health issue. One thing that remote work can do is it enables people to cut out that commute. So if commuting was in some way difficult for you, if it was a disability of some kind that made that one of the points that made you wanted to step out of the workplace, now if you no longer have to do that, fabulous. Or if you have if the workplace wasn't set up ergonomically for you, this is a real opportunity to stay on the job longer. So those are two quick points that I just absolutely love about remote work for older workers. The second big trend is career transition. You and I have talked about this a lot, Dori. And again, it used to be really the outliers and, oh my gosh, you had to be a risk taker. Do you really have so much runway ahead of you that you can change careers and make a career transition? But you know what? Coming out of the pandemic, people of all ages have been changing directions because we had that time to do that soul searching too. We were frightened. We didn't know what lay ahead. And a lot of us lost people we loved during COVID. And we were able to say, oh my gosh, what are my priorities? What do I really want to be doing? The third big trend that I see coming out of it is something I've written about before, entrepreneurship. Again, over 50 workers, over 45 actually, had really started on this entrepreneurial path, really gotten ahead of steam up over this prior to the pandemic. But again, coming out of the pandemic, we see a real resurgence of even more doing this. It really lit up this idea, tying into what I talked about, that self-examination of that inner MRI of what do I care about? What do I want to do right now? Life is fragile. The next trend I saw coming out of the pandemic was contract work, right? So that's the fourth trend. Contract work took off, right? And there's good and bad things about that. For one thing, I think much of it is remote, of course, too. It opens the global marketplace to all of us for jobs. And you can jump in and out, seasonal jobs, contract for a couple of months at a time. This is a really great thing for people who want to stay on the job longer, but maybe don't want the full-time experience at this point in their lives, or they need to just keep their resume alive while they keep looking. So contract work, and we can talk about the downside in a minute, but the final one is education. The fifth big trend is virtual learning just took off. The enormous amount of opportunities to learn virtually is just a huge, big movement forward, I think, in terms of keeping your skills up to date. You don't have to get master's degrees. You can cherry pick certain skills you want to refine or upskill, brush up on, whatever it might be. Really quality education and the opportunities out there that you can do virtually from your own home is really stunning and a great advance and a great way to help older workers stay on the job. So those are my big trends, and we can dig into them deeper if you would like.
Yes, why don't we dig into them deeper and what your sense is on how they impact older workers, just even thinking about the technology part or the transition, entrepreneurship. There is ageism. It's alive and well, and as we've discussed before, internalized ageism, where we sometimes disown our future selves because we believe we're perhaps not as capable. Can you just talk more about the impact, the pros and cons for older workers in these different five arenas?
Yeah, I think that they all have enormous positive boost for older workers who can embrace them. And again, a piece of that, as you noted, is a bit of the technology piece of it. Our older workers often get the rap of not so adaptable and nimble and willing to learn new ways of doing things. But it's easier than ever to do that. And there's even learning platforms get set up. That is, you're taught by teachers and professors who are over 50 teaching you. It's primarily for people over 50. So if you're not, you don't have to be embarrassed. You can, no question is off limits. And so I think we see more of this kind of learning platform out there. And also the ability, as I mentioned, with the ability to learn, just piece out certain skills. So you don't just sign up for big programs or take a huge time zap in order to go somewhere in order to add these skills. And the other interesting thing about the remote angle and the virtual nature of what we can do nowadays is you can form these almost, if you're looking for work, these job search groups informally online, whereas it used to be you had to make a point of connecting in person over coffee, which is still a great thing, or lunch, whatever. But if you can get a little group of people together who are also in similar situations as you are, you can help keep each other accountable to more, to the job search, to finding, to networking, meeting new people. And Dory, not to put a huge plug in for career coaches, but I happen to be a huge fan of them. This is another way, because of the virtual nature of things these days, that we can connect with people who can give an unbiased look at where we are, really look at our resumes, our LinkedIn profiles. What can we spiff up about these? And you don't have to even be in your hometown. It can be a coach that you connect with for virtual meetings or phone meetings. And I think this is hugely successful and a great ingredient for people who are looking for work at this stage. Is your friends and family, they really care. They do, but they don't want to hear about it every day. And they're also maybe not going to ask you the tough questions that you need to ask yourself when you're looking for what's next for you and how to take control of your working life when you're over 50. These are questions that it's really nice to have a sounding board who you can work against and can ask you some of those probing questions. And Dory, I will add one of my favorite questions that you told me you asked your clients, and is what role does finances play in this for you? So at this stage in life, it matters if you're looking for work, what you need in terms of pay and what you're looking for, because it can really narrow your choices. But if you do your financial homework and really get lean and mean and understand what role continuing to work plays in your future financial security, it really helps you get down this path a little further. Those are a couple of quick things. Now, the ageism thing, I did mention how I do think remote work is wonderful for fighting ageism, right, and also the ability to learn. But I wanted to mention quickly the contract job part of it, because I will say the downside of contract work is that if you're over 60, it might have a different appeal than if you're 50 to 60 or 50 to 65, I should say. If you still are looking for an employer-based healthcare program or employer retirement savings opportunities, when you're a contract worker, you don't have that. They're not paying you benefits. It's great for employers. They love it. It can be excellent for you. But you are responsible for these things. So you need to be quite diligent and disciplined and understand that those are going to be some hurdles you'll have.
Oh, that's an excellent point. I think when people are over 65 and you have the access to Medicare, then there's a little bit more freedom in terms of the health care benefits and retirement benefits. However, when you're younger than that, it really is important to be aware of that. So what's your sense of some ways, and I think it's tied in, I'm going to ask a different question. You mentioned before your kind of MRI or the kind of your fitness plan. Talk about that if you would, because I think that's individual piece of how we bring ourselves to these trends, to the job market.
Yeah, I'll talk about two aspects of this story. And the one thing has been my mantra for some time now is Carrie's fitness plan. And I actually think this is good for anything you do in life, but it's especially good if you're over 50 and you're looking for work or trying to get some direction in what you want to do, because this can be a stressful time. And a lot of individuals did actually, during the pandemic, retire early, or they took up an early retirement package, or their jobs went away, right? And then this year, thanks to a crazy stock market and the inflation situation, people have stepped back into the workplace. So we see people unretiring, and they're seeking about, they've had to do that inner soul searching about, they've had a chance to take a breath and say, okay, what it is do I really want to do? In order to get to that space, when we talked a few minutes ago about ageism, which this is part of what you face when you get out there and you're looking for opportunities, is if you can be, and people will say, should I get Botox or dye my hair when seeking that fountain of youth? But truthfully, if you can get physically fit, and I'm not saying bench pressing or running fast miles or body shaming people, you can be any physique, any kind of whatever, however you are. But if you can feel, eat with an eye on nutrition and have a sense of vibrancy that comes from a degree of physical fitness, it gives you this energy. And I encourage people to build in some program into their daily regime or their weekly regime that keeps you accountable. I walk my dog a couple of miles a day, but that doesn't have to be what everyone, you might swim, you might have a yoga class, whatever it might be, but have something that helps you move your body and feel engaged. Because when you're physically fit, people don't know what it is, but they want to be around you. You have this energy, this positivity, this can-do spirit, and I'm not saying it's wiping away the wrinkles. That isn't going to happen, or the gray, but it's going to give you this energy and this vibe that is fantastic. So I encourage that. The second piece of my fitness program is, which I alluded to there a minute ago, is financial fitness. At this stage of life, when you're looking for what's next, you really, if you can be lean and mean so you don't have debt hanging over your head, it gives you choice. Money is the biggest stumbling block, whether you want to start a business or you want to change careers to go in a new direction. You'll probably need to take a pay cut. If you start a business, you might not pay yourself initially, or you may need to invest in your business. Or if you're career changing, you may very well start at a lower salary than you were before until you build up your expertise. If you can pay down any big debt, this is a process. It doesn't happen overnight. But if you can really do the budget, people hate to do a budget. You go, ugh. But if you can really sit down, look at the numbers, talk to your partner, whatever it might be, what are the parameters here? Can you pay down some of those debts? Maybe not right this minute, but can you move somewhere where the cost of living is a little bit less? Can you downsize your home? I'm not saying to do that right now. That economy isn't an interesting place for trying to make big changes like this. But it's worth taking that time to get financially fit. The third piece is spiritual fitness, and that's really not religion, but it's having, again, yoga, tai chi, some sort of meditation process, something that is your place to go to find a center, to quiet things down. Those three fitness aspects, I think, can come together to give you that pause, that place to start from. The other thing I like about, and actually I learned this from you, Dory, and I like this a lot, is taking the car to do some of these exercises if you're not sure exactly what it is you're good at or what you like to do, to really take the time to out all kinds of different jobs you've had in your life. And what did you learn from those? For me, I sold Avon when I was younger, and I was terrified because I was very shy. But what I take away from that experience, and we did knock on doors then, is that it was so uncomfortable for me to sell. But the fact is, once I made that human connection with somebody, it was like a high. And that little human connection I've carried with me throughout my career. Every job I've had has involved, I realize that's my secret ingredient that makes me want to interview people, to speak on stages and meet people in that way, or even talking like we're talking. The human connection is super powerful, but I can trace it back to that job. So I'm going to stop there briefly, because I would love to hear your thoughts on that for a minute, because I think that is really a great exercise for people to find those things.
Oh, I definitely think it is. I really like people to really write down all the skills and really break it apart, going way, way back. And one of the things you can do is think about which ones you've transferred throughout your life, which are some of the ones you do well and that you do want to keep doing. What are the ones you don't do, you need them in order to be marketable, and maybe now is the time to learn a little bit more. And what are just some other things that you've always wanted to learn that you haven't had a chance? And what are the skills you maybe are really good at, but you would like not to transfer if you have a choice. I do think that's helpful to think about. I'm just remembering Elizabeth Eisel at one point when I interviewed her. She talked about that often work that we've done in our first decade sometimes sets the course. Now, I don't know when you were doing the Avon, but it doesn't have to be in the first decade. But it's interesting what we've done and how it influences us. I know at age 5, I sold dandelions. I picked dandelions, and I would get paid for picking dandelions. And I think that spurred my entrepreneurial spirit. It was all I could do as a little 5-year-old, and I'd get a penny a dandelion or a bunch of dandelions kind of thing.
But it makes me smile to think of these things. I think the process of self-exploration is invigorating for people, because sometimes people at this point, especially coming out of the pandemic, that you feel stuck, you feel out of control. You feel as if things happen so quickly in you, there's nothing you could do to stop the thing. And these are ways, these things that we're talking about are just magic strings to pull to help you get control back, to feel like, aha, I understand myself a little bit better here. And what do I want? I encourage people, if they're looking for work too, to say, you know, at this stage of our life, first of all, nothing's forever. This is like a patchwork quilt. You don't, whatever you decide you're going to do, it's not linear like your other career was. It doesn't have to be at any rate.
Right.
So when I went back and I wrote a book called What's Next, Follow Your Passion and Find Your Dream Job. And when I went back and interviewed those people, they had made big career changes after 20 years of doing something. I went back when we turned it into a paperback and a hardback, and a third of them had moved on to doing different things. And nothing's set in stone. So you just have to take a jump, take a risk, try something new and test it out if you can. If there's a way you can job shadow somebody or do an apprenticeship, there's more and more of these internship programs looking towards the older workers. Not enough, I know that, but they are starting to percolate up. But again, it's steps you can take to feel in control. The other one I like is younger people, and I was just talking to my niece about this, they like to scattershot, send job resumes to all kinds of places. 20, 30, 40, sending out lots of resumes is something they just do. And they think that works for them. But at our age, that does not work. It really is, asking yourself the question first, where do you want to work? What kind of nonprofit or for-profit, whatever it is, has a mission that you believe in, that you would be really proud working for that company, that you, their service or their good that they, whatever product they make is something that really matters to you. This is a time in life to do work that is meaningful on lots of different levels. I encourage people to hone down their job search by looking at companies that they admire. And when you send out resumes to 10 companies versus 30, and again, you and I can talk about this more, it's your network, right? Networking is one letter away from not working. Especially at our age, it's who do you know? Because employers they're a little chicken. They want to have some security that somebody has referred you that they know, somebody they know or knows. But doing all that digging, and LinkedIn is great for this, to see who you know at those 10 companies that you admire. And then if you get in the door for that interview and you show your curiosity and your passion for their mission, my goodness, that's wearing your heart on your sleeve. And it really resonates, don't you think?
Oh, I definitely think so. I think it's like you bringing your whole self, authentic self, to what you're doing. And I think doing the research, thinking about why you admire certain people or certain companies. You talk in your book, too, about it's not just for a business that you want to create like a mission statement and a vision statement, but we need to do it as an individual. Maybe talk a little more about that, too.
Yeah, Dory, that is so true. Everyone thinks of, oh, this company's got their highfalutin mission statement or the nonprofit does, and that's all fantastic. But we as people need to, as individuals, it's critical to do that, all these kind of exercises that I talked about in the book and you and I are talking about here, to really get to the root of what it is that you care about, what it is that really matters to you, and they're short. A mission statement is really a sentence or two, or maybe it's three. But if you have your own mission statement, it gives you the power. It gives you the ability to make decisions on opportunities that might come your way. For example, like for me with my work, and I ran my own business for over 20 years, and I've worked in-house for employers, and but I've always considered it me, Inc., no matter, and I'm working in-house for Yahoo Finance right now, but what I always think of them as whoever, if I am in-house, they're just my primary client, right? I always have lots of things going, but especially when I ran my own business, I had my mission statement was, if I take on this assignment, will I make a positive impact in somebody's life in terms of their financial security and being? And that could be a job or understanding personal finance or making sense of a divorce or becoming a widow, whatever it is for women, because I've written a lot about women and money. But it was always very clear to me, if it was just writing something that was promoting somebody's product or some new gimmick or whatever, that wasn't going to, it's could I make that direct line that I was helping somebody? And that was a pretty easy divider line for me on whether I would take on work or not, is could I see that direct line of helping somebody with some takeaway advice and handholding.
Mm-hmm. So getting that clarity of what's important to you and what you want to say yes to and what you want to say no to. But it also makes me think about this whole notion of mindset, believing in yourself and this idea of the growth mindset versus the fix. Maybe you can talk a little about that. Go ahead.
Yeah. We all got to have some mojo. If you don't think that you have stuff to offer, and I can't remember whether this is something that is universal out there or whether you and I talked about this before, but even going back and looking at old performance reviews you had or things that people have told you about your work or whatever, try to gather up some string on these positive accolades you've had about your work over the years. And it doesn't have to be related to your job per se. It could be volunteer work you've done. It could be all kinds of things, just helping out a friend. But it's indicative of your mindset. And if you can start from a place where you have that inner confidence that you have something to offer, whether it can be a small thing, having compassion and kindness, these are some things that a lot of people are lacking, or they don't know how to show them or share them. There's all kinds of ways to go about this, but having that, and I've used that word previously a few sentences ago, I think, but if you can really truly be curious about the world around you, that word is starting to get overused a bit, but it is a great word and it's a great way to look at the world. And when you're curious, you're always interested in learning new things, of trying a new way of doing things. And when you're in an interview somewhere and you throw out that word, it says to the hiring manager or whoever you're speaking to that you're willing to open your mind to new ways of doing things. And that's really critical. And to tie back into my discussion about one of the fundamental changes of lifelong learning is here to stay. The fact is, you can no longer get away with not constantly be learning new things. The world is just changing too fast, and it doesn't have to be related to technology. It's everything. So you have to, the way our jobs are done, the kinds of jobs that are out there, it's all shifting quicker and quicker. So you have to constantly be allowing yourself to learn new things. And anytime you learn something new, it builds resilience, right? Because you're a beginner and you don't know anything, and you feel stupid, and then all of a sudden you gather knowledge, and you're not an expert necessarily, but you're learned, you have knowledge. And so you do the shift back and forth, and that's the string of resilience. And that's what education and learning can give to us on a daily, steady basis. And when you start to learn new things, your whole brain shifts, your whole body, you start seeing the world differently. And it can be something that has nothing to do with the work you do, but just that this process that I just talked about of being a beginner and then learning, it's this rhythm of life. It's this wonderful way that you start looking at the world around you in a different way. And I think it's really exciting. And it's also a way of building, as you talked about, that growth mindset.
I think that's so important. It does remind me when I went back to school, and it was so nice. I was like the adult learner, and it was okay to say, I don't know, I'm learning. And the intergenerational piece, it's such an important part. And I know often when I'm doing presentations, people say it's so hard to have a younger boss, or it's hard to, people don't value me. What's your sense on how to be able to embrace and thrive in the intergenerational workplace?
Yeah, I'm so glad you asked that, because it's just so perfect. First of all, we've got all these generations in the workplace now, and the way of the population, the way things are going, we're an aging population. Not as many younger workers coming up, more older workers staying on the job longer. And so you have all these different generations working together. And this isn't just the model for today. This is moving forward. This is our future. And there are these pairings. It's no longer an exception to be an older worker with a younger boss. This is a reality that is very much ingrained in the workplace and will continue to be. But here's the great news. I personally have been talking about this for a number of years and telling older workers, yes, it's a two-way street, you have to respect each other, blah, 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 and I give all this advice. But just this year, when I took this position at Yahoo Finance, guess what? I am now working for a younger boss. And she's, I don't know her age. She's absolutely fabulous. She's a couple of decades younger than me, probably. But the thing about it is all that stuff that I used to tell people I've had to do. And I tell you, it is so energizing to work with her. She is so smart and she's clever and she totally respects me in a way that I feel valued. And man, it comes right back from me to her because I truly value her perspective on things, looking at things from an angle that I hadn't thought of before because I've been entrenched in my way of thinking. And it just opened up the door for me in a way that has made my work so exciting. Every day is energizing. And so it's really a marvelous experience. Here's the one tip. When I started, Dory, and this is what I always had told people as well, the technology piece, right? And then secondly, it comes down to communication, right? So here we start this job, and I'm emailing, and I'm trying to phone call, and I'm texting, and I'm not getting answers back from my manager. Or I did, and it was very slow in response, and I was getting upset about it, and I thought, what the heck? And then it dawned on me that she did all her correspondence with her team on Slack, which is what Yahoo has as their internal communication system. I had never worked in Slack, so technology new to me. And as soon as and it's not hard to do, but as soon as I realized that, then no problem. Seamless communication. Brilliant. But it took me like 2 weeks to figure this and I could have really solved this issue of my inner turmoil if I had simply asked her, how do you like to communicate from the beginning? But I didn't. Just assume she would do it the way I did, which was I tend to do text or email. And then the last piece, story is that I'm a writer, right? And so they write in, she said, we use Google Docs. And I said, oh, that's fine, but I work in Word. And she said, no, I don't think you understand. We work in Google Docs.
Another new skill.
I'm like, oh, technology. Okay, Carrie. Well, yeah, I have a good friend, and I think you might know him too, Mark Miller, who he writes for Reuters and has a great, he has a new book coming out himself. And anyway, I called Mark because I knew, I emailed Mark, I should say. I knew Mark had switched to Google Docs like 2 years ago, and he told me he loves Google Docs. So I'm like, Mark, I really need help. And he's, no problem, screen share. And he just did this tutorial with me, and it was brilliant. And if you have any trouble, again, just ping me, and we'll do this again. But he said, guess what, Carrie? You can also just Google it. There's so many questions. Anyway, I reached out. I asked for help. I never complained, and I seamlessly started writing in Google Docs. But it did take a little bit of practice for me. I'm not saying I did it overnight, but it's perfect now. I get it. But if I hadn't reached out and asked for help, it wouldn't have happened. So those are lessons for all of us. When we switch jobs, we take on new challenges, new ways of doing things.
I think that asking for help often can be such a difficult thing. I think it's hard for men and women. I'm not going to put it in a gender thing at all, but I think asking for help, it somehow seems if you ask for help, it's a weakness when in fact it's a strength. But you're absolutely right. You can Google almost anything now, and on YouTube, there are instructions for pretty much everything. But so what about, and then I want to start having a few of the questions that are coming from people. I know some people on the call have the added situation that they've been retired from their job. It wasn't necessarily their choice. Any thoughts, help on, because that can feel demoralizing, and to be out there that you really weren't expecting necessarily to be out there, and to try to think about the what's next and what do I have to offer. Any thoughts for people that have that added layer of whether it have been mergers or acquisitions or just laying off people?
Yeah, no, you're right about not feeling in control, right? That's the ultimate sort of when it wasn't your choice. But the best thing you can do is really, as we like to say, just one step at a time. It can be overwhelming if you look at this whole big picture of what do I want to do next. And again, I think I alluded to this at the beginning. Nothing has to be forever. You just have to get started on this path. And whether it's looking back at the different jobs you've done over your lifetime, doing a skills evaluation, like you, I know that you talk about the Clifton Strengths Finder, is it? Or there's another one at the University of Pennsylvania, a happiness one that.
Authentic happiness.
Give yourself permission to open up and do some exploration. And again, it's just, or take a course. Take one course. You don't have to get a certificate in anything. See if you like it. Does that really interest you? And just give yourself that opportunity to breathe a little. And people tend to feel like this pressure and the stress that I've, and again, the financial piece can play into this. If in fact that's an overriding issue, you don't have that opportunity to the luxury to do this, a lot of this work. But if you can, try to build some of it in so that you feel that you're coming from a position of strength. You've narrowed down your own self of where you might like to work. You've thought about who do you know of who work at some of those places that might be able to make an introduction for you or at least walk your resume down the road. Who can help you get your LinkedIn profile spiffed up? Frankly, my opportunity with Yahoo Finance came from a recruiter on LinkedIn. I had not been looking. It came through the transom. So again, if you have a good LinkedIn profile, if you have that you're open to opportunities, these kinds of things, there's little pieces to the puzzle you can put together. Think of it like a puzzle in a way. And no, it's not a game, but it is in fact something that it's piece by piece. It's not going to happen overnight. And maybe sometimes you do have to take one of these contract jobs. As we talked about, there are enormous amount. The global marketplace has opened up to us now with virtual opportunities. Take something to keep your resume alive, and you may find something that grows into a full-time job right there, even if it's a placeholder for you right now. And again, we've talked about this in the past, Dory. If you can get out and volunteer, if that's the one easy thing just to get out of your head and into the world and you're networking, you're using skills, hopefully. Those are just some little things. One other thing I write about a gentleman in my book, and there are plenty of other examples of this, I'm sure, but he actually was laid off from his job and he was in sales and he could not get another job in sales and he put it down to age discrimination, but you couldn't really call it that, right? There was no, they couldn't really, but he sensed that when he'd get in the door for interviews when he did. So he ended up, he loved to sail, and that's what he'd sailed since he was a kid, and he had taught sailing before at different stages in his life. So he went down to Florida and took a winter job just teaching sailing at a sailing school in Longboat Key. And one day he was out with somebody, an executive from a company in New Jersey, and he was telling the guy how he was looking for another job. He was just doing this. And the guy said, with my company, he said, we're looking for someone to be a project manager. And he said, I'm not a project manager. I've actually never done that. I don't have any other certifications for that. And he said, oh, no, you are a project manager. I've been out here sailing with you every day. You get from A to B. You figure out how to make this course. No matter what the weather is, you do this. He said, I think you'd be great at this job. He went and interviewed, and yes, he did meet the guy in a networking situation like that. But guess what? He got the job. He absolutely loved it, and he's been promoted twice since then, and you just never know.
Well, it's a beautiful example of that we sometimes don't think about where some of our skills come from and that it may not fit something with a curriculum thing, a credential, but we might actually have the skill and not give ourselves credit for it. So I think it's a great example. So Jan from Oregon, I'm laughing only because Jan's a dear friend and she's recently moved to Oregon. And in fact, I want to quote her before I ask her question because she's really one of my role models. And she says, meaningful work, paid or unpaid, through one's last breath. And I think it's true. And I think it ties in with what you're saying, Carrie, about if you're in a transition, do project work, gig work, volunteer. You know, the important thing is to be connected, engaged, and feel a sense of meaning and purpose to keep your self-esteem up. And it's important to think about that. But the question Jan asks is, it ties into when you were talking about the importance of lifelong learning and education. She wonders what changes are needed in the structure of higher ed in order to support the ongoing skills for the kind of ongoing skills that older workers need to keep up with the needs of the job market.
Yeah, I love that question. And it is something that, and I think I know who Jan is. So hello, Jan. I think it's higher education has been grappling with this for a number of years now. And especially, we just saw last week that some surveys have come in and showed that undergraduate enrollment is actually down because the kids are not going straight onto the college path and there's more opportunities for skill-based learning. And so I think they're trying to figure out their revenue streams and realizing with an aging population, they need to find a way to provide this demand for continually to upskill, to reskill, but not in these massive four-year programs, but in a more nimble way. And we have these high-end programs at Stanford, which is fabulous, and at Harvard and at Notre Dame and University of Texas. I love all those programs. Fellowship learning, where you go back to school on campus for a year with your knapsack and study, and it's fantastic, but not everyone can afford to do it that way. So it needs to come down a notch. I wrote a story for the New York Times about a year or so ago about this initiative, and a couple of states have these, but the one I wrote about primarily was in Ohio at Cuyahoga State or Cuyahoga Community College. And the community college bought a semi-truck, the trailer, and they retrofitted it with computers and stations and learning stations. And what they do is they take this out to employers and park it in their parking lot. And so when employees, older and younger, but this is a great opportunity for older workers to stay on the job by upskilling where there's training and the employer knows exactly what skill they need to have. And they say, here we are, we're going to do this workshop or whatever the training program is. They can just flip out during work. They have time to go to the trailer and do this. They don't have to go after work. They don't have to seek out this on their own. They bring the education to them. This is a really wonderful way to provide education that employers, because they often say, we can't find the right skilled workers. Here's your chance. What do you actually want them to learn? Colorado has the Pueblo Community College is doing something similar. I think there's one in Oregon as well. But this is just an innovative way of bringing education. Mm-hmm. But we need to find a way to bring it down. I love the community college system. And if there's a way to link in employers, the Department of Labor through the job centers, if there's a way they can get these all talking to each other, because those job centers have been so set up for younger workers, if we can find a way to harness what employers are really looking for with training and coaching, all that in one place for someone who's an aging worker who wants to stay on the job and needs to, I think this is imperative. So anything all of us on this call can do to help push that forward. But I do think the higher education system is realizing that they need, there's plenty that do offer free tuition for people over a certain age and so on, but we need more of this.
Oh, really good point. I know here in the Boston area, Boston University actually has what's called an Evergreen program. So it's free classes if you're over, I think it's age 60, which gives an intergenerational component and also the opportunity. It's to audit a class, if not degree granting, for the free classes. But wherever you live, it would be probably helpful to look and see what's available, community colleges or other universities. So Jackie from Wellesley says, could you please speak more about finding work for post-65 plus workers who may need to work? She says 50 is an arbitrary number, largely defined by AARP. Some boomers were hurt financially in the 2008 recession when they were in their early 60s and have had difficulty rebuilding financial resources.
That is such a good question. I totally agree with you. They are two different job markets. Somebody 60 to 70, 70 to 80. These are different. You have different needs, different all kinds of things in terms of what you need in benefits, of what kinds of work that you want to do, that you're skilled to do. You're correct. 50 is a completely arbitrary number, in my opinion, as well. And so I try really hard in my work to identify generic elements of a job search or of trying to put yourself on a path to success. But again, when someone's over, if you're over 65, for example, and perhaps you don't need the healthcare benefit you might have needed before, but in fact, you would still like having access to an employer retirement program if you can keep contributing in some way. And so you don't have to start and an income. So you don't have to start taking away from retirement accounts if you've had that ability to save. And so many workers in this country, because we all think everyone's got it, but they don't. Most people work for small businesses that haven't been able to offer until recently. Now we're getting more movement towards this, but we need some big policy changes that allow small employers to offer a way for people to save for retirement, because it's just, it's really quite a problem. But I think over 65, you've still got tons of runway ahead of you. And so you need to have that sort of forward-thinking focus. I think when you're looking for work, you need to show that your ability to, again, I use that word curious, but what you bring to a position from your decades of experience, but also your willingness to move forward and continuing to improve and add value. Because all the employers, age, I honestly think ageism, yes, I think it's really deeply embedded in our culture and our workplace. But a lot of it can come from the individual themselves if they allow themselves to buy into those stereotypes. If you can make the business case for yourself, that's really what matters, because companies just want to know what you can do for them. If you can prove that you can add value, that can go a long way.
So she goes on to ask another question and give some wonderful examples, because it sounds like her work history. I'll just ask a little bit more or make some comments from hers, because I think they're nice observations too. She says, by the way, I think everybody wants to work part-time and maybe already does work part-time, even if full-time. You might want to comment on that. I have difficulty on how to position myself now. And she goes on to say, I'm not interested in managing people or the, quote, big job. Did her MBA at 50, worked 20 years in financial services. Before that, nearly a decade in higher ed at director level, practiced real estate, done some admin assistant jobs, but that doesn't seem to be the answer. She loves your example about the younger boss, understand the beauty of different ages working together. The term she uses is age is the new diversity. And then she mentions she's used Slack and in a volunteer capacity and Google Docs and all, and YouTube is great for tutorials. But that whole issue of how do I position myself? So it sounds like she's had a lot of really good experiences, doesn't want to work full-time, but wants to work, but it's hard. And she was the one asking the question of being 65 plus.
Figured out how to make it work for them and work for, and they love the idea of a part-time contract worker, believe me. And again, if you're working virtually or remotely, I do think you have a leg up at a certain age that it's really what you bring to the party more than anything. It's not so much that they need you to be the corporate champion and onboard you in the same way they would a younger worker where they want the loyalty. But what happens is you do have loyalty. That's what we all have more than that's sort of one of the things that younger workers, now that they're digital nomads, with the ability to to have a global marketplace and to work remotely, they are jumping jobs faster than ever. They've always changed. Well, younger workers, and I know I used to change every 5 years, but they're changing faster than that now because they see another opportunity. The labor market is still fairly tight, so that's been a selling point for them if they to grab a higher salary. That leaves an opportunity for the older worker to get in the door and show their value. I do think part-time work is, because of this resurgence in this area, there's groups like Flex Jobs. I really love what they do with that website. I don't think you necessarily can get a job easily on a job board without knowing somebody or having some connection, but that doesn't mean you can't. It certainly does happen. And here in Washington and in the Boston area, there's a group called Flex Professionals, And they're fantastic. And it's a lot of this contract part-time kind of work, but professional jobs that they do the vetting of you and they do the matching a lot with the company, which is a nice model because it lets everyone feel a little more comfortable with the job search. And there's also, oh gosh, you know who I'm talking about, the other wave, vintage employees, workers, you know who I'm talking about.
Here, I do know because I learned it from you. I'm going to look it up while you speak right now.
work at home vintage experts.
Work at home vintage experts. Yeah.
It's the same thing with all remote work. It used to only be like insurance kind of jobs, but it's moved into tax and other areas. And the woman who started that's done a tremendous job of the pay is good. They match the employee and the employer. And it's all vintage workers. It's all in our age group. And everyone I've interviewed from who have worked through these three that I just mentioned have really been quite happy with the matching process. So there are other ones that do this, but those are two that I have some experience with.
Great. And just to mention that in your book, Carrie, you've got so many wonderful resources of websites and stuff. So I really do recommend that for people. What about this concept of kind of boomeranging back to your old employer? Is that becoming a thing for older workers to go back maybe in a different capacity or phased retirement? What's happening in that realm?
Yeah, I do think we're seeing more of this. And surprisingly, like I talked about the people who did take early retirement in the pandemic, and now they're like, oh, whoops, wait, I really would like to get back to work. They often have gone back to their old employer if it was a good parting, right? If I've never burned a bridge anywhere I work, and I would bet most of people on this call haven't either. We all know it's smart not to do that. And if you can reach back to somewhere, it might not have even been your most recent employer. It could have been the one before that. And just see what kind of, if you still have some connection there, it's a really easy, it's not easy in any way, but what is good about it is you're a known commodity. They trust you automatically and you do them. And it can be an easier dance to get back into work. And you can make it often by encouraging people, volunteer to do work, or not, you're going to be paid for it, but raise your hand to take on assignments that the in-house people don't want to do. Even when I was younger and I started my freelance business, I started doing those profiles of people. Let's put it this way. I'm going to go to an AARP example. I started writing a column for AARP called Great Jobs for Everyone Over 50. And the reason why they asked me to do that job is because nobody else there wanted to do it. Because you had to find people to illustrate these jobs. And it's hard to find people to profile who illustrate these jobs. And I was like, hey, I like meeting people. I enjoy the hunt to find good people to use as examples. I said, yes, I got an opportunity because it was something someone in health didn't really want to do and they had enough on their plate as it was. I had the same experience as a contract worker at U.S. News and World Report. After I had left there, I went back as a freelancer, as a contract worker, and did all those profiles for 3.5 years of people who changed careers from something they had done 20 years ago. And wrote that book, What's Next, out of it, because no one on staff was interested in doing that. If you can find where the chinks are, where the holes are, go after that.
That's a really great example from your own experience. You say, and I know you and I have talked about, retirement is a word that often we need to retire, but it's the word everybody knows. But recently, Serena Williams has talked about evolution or evolving. Can you comment about your sense of that word? And
don't you love it, Dory? Isn't that what it's all about? I mean, yes, she's a lot younger than us, but my goodness, she got it right. It is about, it's an evolution. You're not retiring. We all say that's a stepping backwards. That's a retreat. Right. When you're evolving, that's what we're doing, right? That's exciting. And when Serena said that, it's like, this is an evolution, I'm evolving. I thought, yes, indeed. That is exactly what we all should be embracing, that concept. And again, that growth mindset that you mentioned earlier, that's what evolution says. Yeah, we're not going to change all the wording of this whole culture and this whole industry that's grown up around retirement. But I do think evolution is a more apt word for many of us.
I really agree. Actually, a number of years ago, like 6 years ago, actually, when I did a TEDx talk, it was like embracing your bonus years as a time to learn, grow, and evolve. So I've been an advocate of evolution for a long time. So I'm glad that she's made it much more popular out there. Yeah. So what would be your final, first of all, how do people get your book? What's your website? And then I want a final takeaway from you for people.
Okay. My website is kerryhannon.com. So it's KerryHannon.com. I'm on Twitter, at Kerry Hannon. And I'm on LinkedIn. Please say hello to me there. I'd love to connect with you. And LinkedIn, of course. And then what else was I going to say? And I am on Facebook to a certain degree. A lot of it's just pictures of my dog. But I really think that those are good. In order to get my book, you can go to my website, and I've got a link to the Amazon page. But Porchlight Books is another one I really like. And if you're buying more than a handful of copies, just they give really good discounts that are just as good as Amazon, sometimes better. I like Porchlight, especially if you have an event and you want some of your attendees to have a book. They have like 40% off. It's really a good deal.
The name, the link?
It's Porchlight Books.
Okay.
Yeah, let me see if I can get the URL for you. But go to your indie bookstore too, of course. We love indie bookstores. Yeah. But I love all my books. And this particular one, yeah, it's porchlightbooks.com. Just search Kerry Hannon, control at 50 plus. But this book, I just think I wrestled together a bunch of these really powerful trends that I think we can all get some energy from, get some focus from, take advantage of them. They really work in our favor, a lot of these big trends, and help us to truly take control, no matter what our age, in understanding the shifting workplace, because it is just changing fundamentally. And yes, people are going back into the office, but it's never going to be the exact same as it was.
I think that's a good final word, and I think it's really true. The 21st century and post-pandemic really is a changed work world, and we do have to understand it and adapt to it and learn how to be part of it. So thank you so much for being with us today and sharing your wonderful insight and wisdom, and I'm sure we'll have you back again, because I'm sure you're going to be writing more books too.
I can't help myself, but Dory, you are a shining light, and I really look up to you and follow your work. And thanks for doing these. So these programs, I think, are hugely helpful to all of us, and I just am honored to be a guest. So thank you.
Thank you. And thanks, everybody, for being here today, and stay well and safe, and take care. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Revolutionize Your Retirement Radio with Dr. Dorian Mintzer. To learn more about the resources mentioned on today's show, listen to past episodes, or download our free retirement transition guide, visit revolutionizeyourretirementradio.com.